Hello, my name is Michael Jones. It is October 11th at 5:30. I'm with Unfair Housing, an oral history project from the Metropolitan Housing Coalition and the University of Louisville's Oral History Center. I'm talking with Ms. Yolanda Walker, who is president of the California Neighborhood Leadership Council. So, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good today.
All right. And so why don't you tell me a little bit about your organization?
Well, our organization was spent from another organization that Dr. Michael Brooks had founded both. And it's an organization to do things in the community to revitalize, relift, and rebuild those things in the community and bring that feel of community back. In place. I met Dr. Brooks working with some teenagers. He had a program with the youth on both sides of California, Victory and the California area. And they were getting stipends, workshops, and education. And we are a group that is just trying to bring the life back to the community. And we support other neighborhoods that have issues that are not being supported and voices are not being heard.
So, are you originally from the California neighborhood? Is that where you grew up?
I grew up in the Parkland neighborhood. I grew up in Parkland. I lived in Northwestern Parkway. Then I settled in the California neighborhood, which I've been there over 33 years.
Okay. And so, what was Parkland like when you were growing up there?
Oh, when I was a little kid, around 6 and 8 years old, it had black businesses all through their grocery store, five and dime restaurants. I mean, it was just thriving.
And what year were you born? What year would that have been?
I was born in 59.
Okay. And so when you were growing up, you still saw black businesses there?
Yes, I saw the black businesses. I don't know if you recall the Marsh Bank. She had a 5 and 10 cent store. She was a notary across the street. We had the library, which now is a substation for the police detectives. And I think they've been talking about bringing it back. We had a restaurant called Senators, the Triple Triangle. And it was when community was community. The neighbors looked out for you walking down the street. They knew the news before your family knew the news, because they were just watching us as children. And nobody was exempt from an adult correcting you and leading you down the right path. Also, we had the doctor. I don't know if it was Dr. Young. He used to be there in the community. So it was very prominent black owned.
And when did that start to change?
It started with the riot. It started in the riot. I don't know what year that was. I don't know if it was 68, but it was when the riot came right there on Greenwood, 26 in Greenwood, I believe it was 26 or 28th in Greenwood, 28th in Greenwood. And that's when it started going downhill.
Oh, so how old were you then?
I think I was about 8. Possibly six or eight, somewhere along in there. I think I was about 8.
So what do you remember about that period?
I remembered being in my front yard and seeing people running, and people was telling me to get in the house, and I was wondering why they were telling me to go get in the house. And when I went in the house and I looked at TV, there was fire. I'm not sure it was a police car, but something was turned over. And I was telling at the time my auntie that I was living with and her husband, and I was telling them, I said, that's around the corner, because we lived at 29th in Kentucky. And I'm like, that's around the corner. And I was like, oh, I see. So at a young age, it was like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't think the truth has really came out. You know, there's a bunch of speculation of what happened, but I really don't know what the truth was.
Mm-hmm. And how did that affect your family? What happened? Did you have people who were involved in the riot, or did afterwards, did their attitudes about the community change?
I had a cousin. I had a young cousin that was a teenager at the time. And in my house, I didn't realize it until some years ago. There's a picture of him standing. It takes you back to the riot with Brianna when they were down there on the statue and on the steps. And he's captured in his book holding the flag. But that's more when he went to militant, Black Power, you know, the people need to stand up, you know, those type of things. So it was like seeing that all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But I was too young to really be involved or anything, but I did have a cousin that was a youth, that he was, I guess he was about 16, 17, might have been 18, that started in the movement of activism.
Mm-hmm. And so after that, after the riots, what was your neighborhood like? Did it slowly change, or was it a swift change after that?
It kind of slowly changed. It slowly changed. I think I stayed there for about another year because my auntie passed away and I winded up living with a cousin. Mm-hmm. Because with my youth, my mother died when I was young. So I lived with an auntie. She raised me. And so she passed. So I didn't really, I seen it starting to decline, but you still had that neighborly, they were still neighbors. But then I left from there and I went over in the Alpha Gordon area and was raised up. So I didn't really get to see it. But then as I got older, I saw the decay and the decline as I started getting older in my 20s.
Mm-hmm. And so what schools did you go to?
I went to Brandeis Elementary. I went to Mel for a year. I went to Shawnee for a year, and I graduated out of Pleasure Ridge. But I did also go to Jesse R. Carter and Duval. And I went to Duval in the junior high school years.
Mm-hmm. So did you go through busing?
I happened to miss the busing.
Oh.
And the reason why I missed the busing, because I had a lady to adopt me after some time in my life. She adopted me and she wouldn't enroll me in school. Mm-hmm. So I tried to enroll me in school. So when I enrolled myself in school, I enrolled myself backwards in school. So I missed that first year of busing. And I was in the house one day. That's when I was at Shawnee. They had me go to Shawnee for a year. Mm-hmm. Because I had enrolled backwards.
A grade backwards?
No, I enrolled because the elective that I needed.
Oh.
They wouldn't have brought me all the way from Pleasure Ridge into the city for the elective. And I was almost finished with that elective. So they had me to stay into the city. So I winded up in Shawnee so I could go out there, which now is McFerrin, but it used to be Dietrich. Mm-hmm. And I was taking cosmetology, and I was in my last year, so they wouldn't bring me all the way from there to in the city. And I happened to come in one day from school, and the buses was turning over. They were, you know, rocking the buses and everything. And she told me, she said, now do you see why I wouldn't enroll you in school? And I lived in that community that the buses were being turned over. They were talking to them. And so I ran down to the corner because everybody on that bus was my neighbors. They were, then the next year I did wind up going to Pleasure Ridge, but I missed that year of all that hostility and turning over the buses and mistreating everybody. And I ran down there to make sure all my friends were okay.
And so, go ahead. It was what?
It was on the news, because that's what she was showing me. And all of everybody in the neighborhood, all the teenagers, everybody that I hung around with and lived in the neighborhood, that was their bus on the TV that they were flipping over and calling them all kind of names, and didn't want them to go back. And it really did something to me, because I stood there, and then after I seen the next thing I knew, I was running out the house to meet them at the bus stop to make sure everybody was okay.
And is that sort of when you became an activist?
No, I really didn't become an activist. I guess my oldest is 33. And I guess I started becoming an activist probably when they were teenagers. I started to really see injustice. I started to see how people were mistreating kids as far as education. And I was in the community, and I would ask my neighbors certain things, and they were like, no, we don't know nothing about it. We never heard of it. And it was like, I've got to get the word out. The people got to know what's going on. And I guess that's when it really started. I was really not at, I don't say at the level that people have recognized me, but those that had known me then, they always know I was trying to make sure they had resources. They knew what was going on in the city. You know, I printed walking in the neighborhood. And I think really when I've always been an activist at heart, but when they tried to put the methane over in the community that I love and the different things, my eyes kind of opened up a little bit more, because I was walking in a neighborhood that I didn't even realize how deep this fungus and things were on the home. It was like, you know, you're walking by, you're in the community, and then when your eyes are open, it's like, oh my God. And then hearing the stories of people, because I've always had the heart for those individuals that I guess people call them the underdog. They don't get ahead. So I've kind of always been, it's always been in me. It just kind of emerged further, because I always wanted everybody to be aware of what's going on, because it doesn't have nothing to be with people, are they ignorant? No, they haven't had the exposure. Nobody has brought it to them to understand.
Okay, so is this when you're in the California neighborhood that your eyes were opened?
Yes.
What's going on?
Yes. I would say when I moved in the California neighborhood and my children roughly were teenagers is when it started.
And what year was that? About what year?
19. Let's see. My daughter was born, I believe, in 88. So I would say I give it about the 90s.
Okay.
About maybe 94, 95. I'll give it the 90s.
And so what were some of the first issues that you got involved with? You did again.
The difference, sorry about that. Right. People in the neighborhood just wasn't, I was receiving information and other individuals in the neighborhood wasn't receiving it. And that's what got me started. It was like,
Were you receiving because you were looking for it?
No, it was coming to my house. It was coming to do a lot of things too. Hold on just a second.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So, I was asking you about some of the early issues you were involved in fighting.
Well, some of the issue was the methane. Also about them, which they're going forth with Phyllis Wheatley, moving it out of the community. Air pollution of Heaven Hill. Those type of issues.
So do you think that the California... And well, do you think the California neighborhood has to put up with things that other neighborhoods don't?
Yes, they put up with quite a bit. It's like a dumping ground. It's like, let's pick on them, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. You had talked about the West End TIF, and I know that you've been going to the meetings and you've been critical about the TIF. Why is that?
There's a lot of reasons. Why is that? Number one, it was done without community involvement. Even though it is said it was community involvement, there was no community involvement. No one was talking. It was under COVID. It was put in legislation in a few hours before the end of session that nobody could talk about it. When you ask the individuals that drafted it and put it in to give you clarification of understanding what it's about, they don't even know they self. They even tell you, well, we need to go back and read it. We need to educate yourself. How do you educate yourself in a bill that you orchestrated, you signed it, and you took of it? So it's like, how do you not know what you put your signature on? And then you're asking me and other homeowners, business owners, renters to fund something for 20 years down the road that puts another burden on individuals that may not have the income to do it. So you are pricing us out. And we have no voice of what's saying what will be built. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll tell you what is needed. And then you say, well, oh, there's going to be 9 people represented in the community. Well, they still overvoted. Mm-hmm. They're overvoted if you do put 9 on there, even if they're not 9 of your window dressing. Well, your tax will be freezed. You cannot freeze taxes. If taxes go up, tell me, how is it frozen? Mm-hmm. Is it from that base? Okay, say that for November, your tax is $500. So is that $500 going to last for that 20 years? But on your $500, you have JCPS, which can do this, mm-hmm. and has done this, 89.6% on your $500 for this year. Mm-hmm. Now, say 2 years down the road, okay, you're still sitting at $500, but you got that 89.6. And they said, oh, well, we need a tax on another 89.6 on top of that. Where is the freeze?
Yeah.
As long as entities.
Are you supposed to be able to get a rebate for what you overpay?
The way that this rebate sounds, and as they are saying, and they put in a chat room, okay, your max is 1,000. Your max is 1,000. You can file it on your tax. But what if I don't file tax? I'm a senior. I'm on a fixed income. My house is paid for, but I still got to pay my taxes. Mm-hmm. I still got to pay my taxes because that's just how life is. But mm-hmm. if I don't put in, I don't get it. But okay, I have a $1,000 threshold that I can rebate for. So if my extra is $600 and I put in for the 6, that leaves me 4. So if you come back next year or 2 years down the road and I've already got 6, I got 4, but it's another 6 on top of that. So I don't, where do I profit? Because I'm still going to owe, I had four, I got six, I'm going to owe two. And then after that year, there's no more. I don't have that plateau anymore. It only runs to what they're showing is 1,000. But then what we're hearing is not, we're not too sure, but that's what is on the tax. What's it, TurboTax or whatever it is? That's what they were showing to us. So after I reached that $1,000 and anything over that, that's on me. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't get it because I've got the max.
And so the savings also, it goes to the property owner. So a renter is not really going to benefit from this. Is that right?
No, what the renter will do, because it is property, and if I was the landlord, I'm going to pass that cost on to my renters, which means their rent increases. And it depends on where you are renting, because some have utilities included, some do not. So if I am a landlord and I don't have utilities included, you have to pay your own utilities. Then I'm going to spend that cost to you. That's an extra cost on you, plus your utilities. If MSD decides they won't put another fee on what they are doing and come back, or LG&E wants to put another fee on, then you are triple taxed. But I'm going to pass that to you, because as the landlord, no matter how much I love you, I got to pass it to you. If I'm a business owner and on my property and you come and spend money for my goods, I'm going to have to inflate my product. And so that may price me out. You're going to go find services somewhere else. If you're a renter, you're going to try to find somewhere else. And it may not even happen.
So make sure I'm understanding. So as far as the extra costs you're talking about to the landlord, are you saying that the landlord would pay like the whatever the frozen rate is, but school board fees or whatever he would pass on to his renter?
Yes, that's, but you cannot freeze. That's what I'm not understanding, because I'm even hearing it's unconstitutional. That's where there's a lot of things that are going on that need to be clarified, that individuals are not giving correct answers. One minute they say, oh, it's going to be freeze. And then the next minute they come back and say, oh, no, it's unconstitutional. You cannot freeze nobody's taxes. So which one is it? But if I'm a landlord, whatever new fees I get, I may have to pass it on to my renters. No matter how much I love it.
And have you seen any projections of how much they expect the TIF to bring in?
No, they don't know anything. We don't know. We don't know where to find them. We don't know where they are. We got to wait and see. The 30 million, we won't know. I think the thing was, we won't know until after the taxes start this year. But then I'm hearing, that's what I'm saying. You're saying one thing and you're saying there's misinformation, but the misinformation is coming from you. So we have to listen to what you're saying. But then you say, oh, it might be 2 or 3 years down the road before we even can project to tell you that.
So would you like to see some changes in the legislation when the General Assembly gets together in January?
I'd like to see it stopped. We all completely start from bottom, period. There's no need in even going into something that has so much confusion and nobody knows what's what and this is happening. You know, you flying the plane and building it all at the same time. Who does that? Who we're building the plane, and this is what it is, and we're doing it as we go along. So whatever pops up in the head, that's what it is. No, it should be concrete. It should be where everybody knows what it is. And when individuals sign something that you have elected to sit and tell you they don't even know what they signed, but they orchestrated it, there's something wrong. So no, it needs to be completely tossed. Just because it's a law don't mean it's a good law, and all laws ain't great laws.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs more than just to go back with the ordinance. It needs to completely be vetoed, and let's start it from the beginning, because how did you get a bill and everybody's in COVID?
Mm-hmm.
You say you had this amount of this and that, but nobody knows anything about it. Everybody's like, when this happened? Only they know with the announcement. When was these meetings? How did these meetings happen?
Mm-hmm.
My aspect of it is toss it in the trash. And if we're going to have something, then that board needs to be completely changed, because these are individuals that I think you heard me say that has raped and robbed and stood in line for this money for years, and nobody has benefited but selected few. And the selected few are the few that they have decided. Because I have sent people to a lot of these organizations to get help, to them people to come back and tell me it did not happen. They went through this program, and when they got so far, here came this stumbling block. But that's not what you said. But you have been in line for grants and monies and on the backs of communities and saying, oh, I'm doing it for the community. I need your support. And the support comes. I've been one that even supported some of them. Mm-hmm. And when it came back to what you said, it wasn't what you said, and nothing has ever benefited the community.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to relook at who's over what.
Are you afraid that ultimately gentrification is going to displace Black people from their homes in the West End?
Well, I'm going to answer that for you, but I'm sure also what was told to me at one of those meetings by Mr. Neal to everybody that was on that, gentrification is here, it's been here, it's going to continue, so you might as well get comfortable basically with it.
Gerald Neal?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, on one of his meetings, that's what he told everybody. Gentrification's already here. It's gonna happen. It doesn't have to happen with this TIF.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you move that Highland Park, you've displaced upper in Shepherd Square, you have displaced out there in Iroquois, you have displaced down at Cotter Homes, you know, so yes. Displacement and the displacement and the gentrification is going to be priced out, but then you asking us to gentrify our own selves with our own money. You asking us to turn around for 20 years, which is a mortgage payment, and give you money for the max of 20 years to move us out and outprice ourselves. So you asking us to gentrify our own selves.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it. That's where I really have a problem. And you can't give me no concrete on what that money is going to do. Where is that money going to go? Are you going to build what this neighborhood over here says? They need food, grocery stores. They need this over here for them to survive. You can't tell me it is what the developer says. And the way the developer is, I looked at a thing the other day, and it's just mind-boggling that the Planning Commission would okay a project for some buffers and some conditional use and don't have a plan of who's going to buy the property, what the property is going to turn into, but we okay. Who does that? Shouldn't the plan be there first and then we go forth? That's another, we're going to build a plane as we're flying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get approval for all this stuff, on this property, but we have no setbacks. We don't have no plans. We don't have nothing. We don't even know if somebody gonna buy the land. We just want you, and they pass it. So this is the same thing. We, what are you gonna build? What are you doing? What are you giving a skyscraper? You know, are you gonna build some more apartments that people are gonna be outpriced and it's not affordable, but it's maybe capital affordable for those that build it, but it's not low income affordable?
So your concern is they're not going to build affordable housing?
Low income. Because when we talk about affordable, we need to say affordable for who? Is it affordable for low income that meet lower than the minimum guideline? Or is it affordable for the developer that's going to get paid? Is it affordable just for the capitalism of the money? So when we say affordable, we need to specify what type of affordability. You know, there's a lot that can be done with that money. We can look at the streets. We can look at the houses. We can look at the boarding houses. We can look at those that are sleeping in abandoned houses on the street. And, you know, so it's what are your plans, your true actual plans? And from what I see is to keep somebody comfortable, but then the lower income to make them uncomfortable and continue to struggle.
So have you been attending all the meetings?
I've attended all of the Gerald Neal meeting, maybe except for one.
And so you haven't gotten any answers to your questions?
Nobody has gotten answers to the question is that you need to come with a positive attitude. You need to have positive energy. And excuse my language, I ain't got no positive energy when you're doing me and you can't tell me how. I'm supposed to like it because you say to like it. In my childhood coming up, to get along, to get along is what my family used to do. And then I see them suffering. So I'm going to get along and continue to suffer and holler, woe is me. When they need to know it's not comfortable. This is not comfortable. It doesn't fit. And you didn't take the time to really do your due diligence of how this will affect. To you, it sounds good. Oh, 80% is going to stay in the West End. But at what cost? And then it's at the cost of the individuals that are living in the West End. That are funding it and have no voice of actually what happens. Yes, it needs to be vitalized. Yes, there are a lot of things that need to come back and needs to be done and make a vibrant neighborhood. Because I would like to, because I do remember you could walk out your back door. Like I was talking about the 28th Street, I go over there and get me a hamburger. I go down here and get my soda, get my pop, get everything I needed, and then come right on back home. I didn't have to ride all the way to St. Matthew's in Middletown to get quality.
What do you think about what they've already, the renovations that have already been done in the neighborhood, like on 18th and Broadway, where the YMCA, and some
what do I think about positives, the YMCA.
Do you see positive changes coming out of this revitalization?
I don't see anything positive out of the YMCA when you are outpricing people that the families can't really afford to be there. when you're talking about $98 a month to walk around a concrete floor. But when you came, you said it would be open to the community. You have a program in there, unless your parent is a part of it, you may not even be a part of it. So when you are pricing individuals that cannot even afford to go in there, how is that helping the community? I see no help in that. You know, but we say these wonderful things and you get the community fired up, you get them behind them, but then after it's done and when the community comes to hold you on what you said to get it established and built, there's so many other things that are not happening. You know, you want to go in people's bank accounts. So you don't want to surplus it. If you do surplus it, people don't need you in a bank account. Some may not have a bank account. A woman over here, she's got three children. She would like for her children to enjoy the Y. Well, she can't enjoy the Y. They can't enjoy the Y because they are outpriced. So here's the child on the corner. And you got this great facility in the West End, but unless mama worked two or three jobs, I can't get you in it. So what has that done?
So you're not really hopeful for any of the kind of Russell revitalization and the greater revitalization efforts in the West Louisville? Do you feel like they're kind of directed by people outside the neighborhood?
I believe it's directly outside for the neighborhood to keep the pockets lined of those that like the caviar and the champagne and like to sit around and say they're doing a wonderful thing. I don't see the benefit of nothing but displacement for those in the community that are already there that is trying to hold on what little bit they have. You know, would love for it to be the other way. Would love for it to really generate what it should truly generate. But at this point, I don't see it. I just see total displacement of homes and families and those that have for years tried to get what little bit on whatever little salary that they have. Because if we look at Beach of Terrace, everybody didn't come back. Park Duval, everybody didn't come back. Iroquois, when they tore it down, I don't believe anything is still built up there but a fence and grass. So where did these people go? And that was all to what? Revitalize, rebuild it. But some of those areas look like California. Almost close to ghost town with the boarded houses and those type of things. So I wish, because we build a pretty building, does not mean that that's for the people.
Well, that's all the questions I had for you. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I guess one thing with the housing, I guess I would like to know how they calculate that an individual may not be able to afford a home. Because that was a little something. I got married and we used my husband VA to purchase the home. But before I even met him, I looked into a home and they were basically, well, due to your income, you don't make enough money for X amount of years. But I worked two jobs. And to me, that is another way of not necessarily redlining, but not giving individuals the opportunity. Because if somebody wants something bad enough, they are going to make sure. And then the bank on top of it, if If they don't meet it, you're going to foreclose on it. So you're not losing any money, but you done already made money while they in it. So I have an issue with, where do you get these calculations? X amount for so many years, for so many in the months, just like purchasing a car. Where are these calculations, and where did the banks, and you have more interest on it than you do with the house. So when you do buy the house, you done triple or double paid for that house.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bank's not, and to me, I feel like that's really a barrier for low income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, families or single moms or dads that want to purchase something.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I hope I help. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been.